It's Monday, the 28th of March, 2016. Happy birthday to Jordan McRae. The Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Show, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and EvanJ311. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast like EvanJ311, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can help support the podcast and sponsor the show for one day. So thank you to Evan. Of course, thank you to Moneyball, who is Australia's best daily fantasy sports site. If you're living in Australia or New Zealand and you're not playing on Moneyball, I think you're doing yourself a disservice. So make sure you're signing up there and playing out these contests to end the NBA season. You can obviously find this podcast wherever you found it on any podcast areas, iTunes, Stitcher. But you can also watch it live on YouTube or delayed on YouTube. But if you are watching live on YouTube at the moment and want to interact with the show and tweet in some questions, I encourage you to do so. Use the Twitter handle at redrock_bball, which you can see on the screen below you. Use the hashtag RRFB. And before the show even kicked off, I had a tweet come through from DB Felt. Do I have to keep listening to your pod every day now that my team is eliminated from the playoffs, or can I take a day off? I'm going to say yes, you do have to keep listening, and you have don't have my permission to stop. Of course, DB failed. You can stop listening at any time, but there's always going to be DFS content on here. There's going to be Dynasty talk as well. And yes, your team is eliminated, but as we head into the off season, we're going to be focusing more on stuff that heads throughout to next season and getting a leg up on competition, Dynasty stuff throughout the off season. And that's when all the announcements will be for the listener leagues that go down as well. And during this week, I'm going to be talking about the current listener leagues who are in their last week of the championship round and going through the combatants in those leagues as well, and who's got a chance to get themselves into the Champions League for next season. Also, a big shout out to Mark Roberts, who took down the inaugural season of the Red Rock Dynasty League today. So congratulations to Mark for doing that. Matt Smith, the unfortunate runner-up, but a great season for Matt, coming from the sixth seed in the playoffs to lose the championship round. So a big effort from Matt as well. We've got a fair bit to talk about. We're going to review the games from Sunday, the five games there. We're going to preview the games on Monday. There's a big 10-game slate on Monday. And I'm also going to do a little bit of schedule work in terms of looking at what's happening for the upcoming week and ways that you can potentially help your team out with ads and drops and when to make moves and all that sort of stuff. So make sure you're sticking around for the show.
Let's get to it.
All right, today's the last day I'm going to do the Instagram and Facebook contest. I'm going to retire it for the rest of the season. On Instagram, we were looking at DJ Augustin today, points, assists, and steals. And DJ, he went for 30, and no one got that one right. And on Facebook, Clay Thompson, another 40-point performance from Clay, but we were looking for combined points, rebounds, and blocks, and the total there was 43. And again, no one got that right, so the prize is going to jackpot into next season. So we're gonna retire the Facebook, Instagram daily contest for this season. Thanks to everyone who has contributed with those so far this season. Let's get stuck into these games. Well, let's get stuck into the monstrous line of the night. That's like where we always want to start the podcast. And that goes to, I think for the first time this season, DeAndre Jordan of the Los Angeles Clippers. He played just 29 minutes in a pretty simple victory against the Nuggets, but he was massive. 16 points, 16 rebounds, 2 assists. But where the value really comes in is 2 steals, 6 blocks, and then he went 7 of 10 from the line. Yes, he was only 2 of 4 from the line, but you know my stance on that. You know that if you own DeAndre Jordan, you are not competitive in that category, and you should be dealing with it in the appropriate manner. So that doesn't mean anything. Jordan is shooting at 71% for the second straight season from the field. That is obviously a massive contribution in that category. We can talk about how bad his free throws are, and yes, they're horrible, but getting a standard score of about 3 in the field goal percentage category is absolutely massive, and you can build, that can really help to build your team, and that can set off some other guys who aren't as good in that area, say like a Ricky Rubio. You put Jordan and Rubio together, and that actually does cancel Rubio out, whereas you go the other way and try and put Harden with Jordan, it doesn't cancel out what Jordan does on the free throw line. But you can, because most of the field goal guys aren't as big a negative as what the free throw guys are. So a guy like Jordan can really be combined with some of those other low shooting point guards, like Kemba Walker, Ricky Rubio, although Walker not probably the best example of that this season, but they're the sort of guys that I'm talking about, and he can fix that problem. His rebounding is massive as well. He's averaging 14 for the season. He's averaging 2.3 blocks. He gets you 0.7 steals. Yes, his scoring is not great. He doesn't hit threes, doesn't get assists. His steal rate, it's okay. But what he does it brilliantly well. And he, despite his, this is how good he is, and we look at the Basketball Monster rankings, say for at 8 cat leagues, despite the fact that over the last week, he's got a negative 7.19 standard score for his free throws, which is just abysmally poor, he's still the 32nd ranked player. That's how good he is. You take those free throws out, you're talking a top 10 talent. And same goes with guys like DeAndre Jordan. No, not DeAndre Jordan. This is DeAndre Jordan. Like Andre Drummond. And Hassan Whiteside was in that sort of case earlier in the season. But they can do massive, massive amounts in those other categories. And it's extraordinarily helpful for you in those categories. And most of the time when you're drafting players, you're not getting positive contributions in every category. There's probably four guys who do that. Maybe not even. So you're looking for contributions in certain areas and building upon those strengths. And Jordan is one of those guys who really just enables you to lock down two or three categories and get you victories in those areas. So a big night from DeAndre Jordan. Let's look now at the waiver wire line of the night. And that goes to DJ Augustine of the Denver Nuggets. Same game. He played 34 minutes with Emmanuel Mudiay struggling again. 18 points for Augustine. 3 triples, 2 rebounds, 10 assists and 2 steals. He has been an absolute revelation since arriving from the Thunder. He is a top 50 player over the last 2 weeks. He's averaging in just 28 minutes, 15 points, 2 triples, 6 assists, 2 rebounds, 1.5 steals. He's a great free throw shooter, a little bit below par this year, but the previous 5 seasons, well, his last 5 seasons before this one, 87, 89, 84, 88, 91 from the free throw line. This year, he's at 80, so he's a little bit down, but it's still not a big issue. But we're talking about a guy that it really should be owned in basically all leagues at the moment. And he's only owned in 32% of leagues and putting up just ridiculously good numbers at this current moment. And the good thing about Denver as well, next week, 4 games. They play Monday, which is always a good way to start off. They've got a back-to-back Wednesday, Thursday, and then they've got a game against the Kings on Saturday. So the matchups he's got, the Mavericks, the Grizzlies, the Pelicans, and the Kings, it is one of the best schedules of the week. I think we've got it ranked as the 5th best schedule for the week, the 3rd best amongst 4 game teams. And you pretty much have to own him at this point. He doesn't require 30 minutes. And if he gets 30 minutes, much like we said many times with Nikola Jokic this season, if he gets 30 minutes, then it's fantastic. All he needs is 26 or 27 for him to do damage at the moment. And with the way that Mudiay is struggling and playing only 22 minutes a game in the last couple, Augustine is primed for a bigger role here. And he plays alongside Mudiay anyway. So really, there's no real reason why you shouldn't be looking at adding DJ Augustine onto your roster. The young gun of the night is a guy who wasn't meant to be playing today because he was dealing with an ankle problem that looked pretty severe, and then he was classified as doubtful to play. But D'Angelo Russell got out there. He played 32 minutes. He scored 22 points. He hit 3 triples, had 3 rebounds, 2 assists, and 3 steals. A big, big night from Russell. He hasn't been great lately. It's safe to say he's outside the top 180 over the last 2 weeks. He's only played 24 minutes a game in that stretch, but Byron Scott has committed to playing Russell more down the stretch and hopefully giving him 30 minutes a night, and that should see his numbers rise back up. But the Lakers have absolutely the worst schedule of anyone next week. They play 3 games. They have Utah on Monday, and Monday's a pretty busy day. They have the Heat on Wednesday, and Wednesday's a pretty busy day. And then they play the Celtics on Sunday, which surprisingly has 11 games on it. So you could be, if you look to add Russell if he was dropped, you could add him and he would do, he might not fit your active roster on Monday, Wednesday, or Sunday. Sure, if you've got a spot on Monday, you add him, but by no means is he a guy that you need to make sure you're grabbing a hold on and holding on to, because not only does he play 3 games and they're on bad days, but the opponents he plays are just horrific for point guards. The Jazz, the Heat, and the Celtics, probably the 3 worst teams for point guards to play against. So he has got a real shit matchup this week. Not a good spot for D'Angelo Russell at all. Copy and paste everything I just said about schedule with the dud of the night, because that is his teammate Jordan Clarkson, who was putrid in this one. He only played 30 minutes. He scored 2 points. He had 5 rebounds and 3 assists. He went 1 of 7 from the field. Like Russell, that schedule next week is terrible. Like Russell, he has been atrocious the last 2 weeks. He has been he's been outside the top 200 over the last 2 weeks. He'll likely be better than that, but the schedule does not inspire much confidence in Jordan Clarkson. So to me, he is not someone that you need to hold on to down the stretch here. Dynasty leagues and keeper leagues, a different story, but in a redraft league, I'm more than happy to move on from Clarkson to get someone like DJ Augustine. I would rather add Augustine over Russell and Clarkson for schedule-wise and even production-wise at the moment there. He's clearly outperforming those two guys, and the extra game makes it not a no-brainer, but it makes it something interesting. Mark Roberts tweets in, he's obviously watching the show live. So Mark, your question is, who is number 0 on the Nuggets? Mark, you should know that. It's Emmanuel Mudiay. It's my Mudiay jersey just up there over my right shoulder. Come on, Mark, you should have every player's number memorized. I'm really bad at memorizing players' numbers there, so I'll give you a pass on that, Mark. That's the nightly awards. Yes, it is. Let's look now at the perfect DFS lineup for the main slate of games on Sunday. At point guard, Ray Felton, 29.3, and Ish Smith, 42.6. I was very big on Ish yesterday against the Warriors. It was a great spot for him. As for Felton, there was a few low-cost point guards who were in play, and I mentioned Barea and Felton as probably the two best ones. Unfortunately, I thought Barea might slightly edge him. You had to pay $100 less to get Barea in there, but it turned out that Felton put up the big game, and that's a couple of decent games in a row for Ray. 29.3 there. Shooting guard, Jim Harden, 52.6. It's 50 points every night for Jim at the moment. And Monte Ellis bounced back from an absolute stinker against the Nets to put up probably his best game in a few weeks or maybe even a month. 46.7 for Monte. Paulie George went for 42.7. He had a pretty good spot there against the Rockets. And it must be said, obviously, that Monte played the Rockets as well. Bob Cove went for 30.2. He's a pretty good player, and I know a lot of people don't believe in him, but he's putting together some nice numbers, and he's going to be a real useful guy down the stretch here. Power forwards, Draymond Green, 46.7. He got another triple-double against the Sixers, so big numbers for him. And Willie Cauley-Stein, 30.4. Another big game from Cauley-Stein. But the problem I have with Willie Cauley-Stein is nothing to do with Willie Cauley-Stein. It is to do with that absolute ass clown George Karl and the way he is handling things in Sacramento. Apart from the terrible things he said about Seth Curry the other day, that has the whole team and basically the whole NBA against him just for the way that you treat your players in public. Then he goes out, and this is 2 days in a row for Cauley-Stein. These are the quotes of George Karl. His offense has been blessed by a lot of good plays by other people. A lot of his success has been, we've made really good passes. It's easy to make dunks and lobs. Cool. Thanks, George. Thanks for putting a lot of confidence into your young player who you have artificially held down all season. And it looks like you're, even when he plays well, despite your absolute mismanagement, that he's going to play well. Your handling of this team this season has been disgraceful. The handling of the Kings organization in general has been disgraceful. He should have been gone when he was supposed to be fired around the All-Star break. That was a terrible decision from the Kings. He is holding these guys down. Look, I don't think it's going to hold back guys like Cauley-Stein in the course of their career, but it's a real just make no sense approach to everything that he's doing. He's doing it literally out of spite, and that's not a good way to go about a professional environment. I'm sure he does not give a single fuck at all about what he does because he's a Hall of Fame coach. He's going to retire. He's not going to coach again. But seriously, this is just an absolutely terrible look for George Karl. I apologize for the swearing there, but it is just absolutely frustrating that someone can go out. And this is nothing to do with fantasy at all. This is to do with your actual treatment of people and the way that you conduct yourself in your job. At least have some common decency and at least have some respect for people who are working in your industry as players and other coaches, because it is just disgraceful the way that he is speaking about players and the way that he is dealing with this current team. I can't get my head around it. At center, Jan Mahinmi, 38.2. Another big night for Jan. He took advantage of that Rockets front court. Everyone can take advantage of the Rockets, apparently, except for Miles Turner, who plenty of you sent me messages and tweets about, saying that Miles had to be the dud of the night. I found a worse one, which was Jordy Clarkson, but Turner, Turner was not ideal, and he had a great opportunity to put up a big line. But Mihimi is the one who took advantage. That total, or that lineup, would have given you 359.4 FanDuel points, which would have been pretty impressive, I'm fairly sure. Well, it would have been, because it was the best lineup you could have put together, so you would have won. So that would have been impressive. Let's have a quick break now for a word from our presenting sponsor today, which is SeatGeek. Have you ever been frustrated trying to buy tickets online? Most sites make it complicated, and they all try to sneak in huge fees at checkout. That's why you need to try SeatGeek. They've made it easier than ever to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. SeatGeek's the best place to go and look for tickets. As I said, I'm probably heading over to the States at some point in a couple of months, and I've been browsing for events and things that I can go and see, and depending on what cities I go to, obviously, what events I can go and see on SeatGeek, and the prices there are always competitive, and it's a real breeze to go through that and find those events that I'm going to go to. SeatGeek has taken all the work and hassle out of shopping for tickets. They pull all of the tickets available on other sites into one place, so you save time and never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming events, and SeatGeek will let you know if ticket prices fall. Even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is ranked based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats. And before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detail maps to see the view from your seat. Best of all, SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. Unlike StubHub, they show you the full ticket price from start to finish and never try to trick you with huge fees on the checkout page. My listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, and click add a promo code. This doesn't take very long. Enter the promo code REDROCK. It's one word. REDROCK. One word. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code REDROCK today. It is a great way of getting yourself a bargain on tickets. It's a great way of being able to support the podcast as well, along with the other ways, you know, leaving reviews and that sort of stuff. But adding this promo code in really shows that the SeatGeek people that you are supporting this show and you're supporting their business, and it gives you a bonus as well. I don't see any way that anyone loses from that arrangement. So thank you to everyone who has done that so far. All right, let's get into these games and start looking at them in that little bit of extra detail as we always want to do on this podcast. Here we go. Got that up on the screen. And that's a good point that someone just tweeted into me. There we go. DFS Lou says, I thought Dirk was a dud tonight more than the others based on his previous averages. That's a good point. That's not how I normally do the dart of the night. I just do, and it's not based on DFS, Lou. It's based on seasonal leagues. Maybe I should introduce a DFS dart of the night as well. But the dart of the night is not based on the player's averages. It's based on guy who's owned in majority of leagues who turns in literally the worst performance. And that was Clarkson today. So it's not based on who was much worse than what you expected or who was much worse based on salary. It's based literally just on who was the shittest out of everyone who is likely owned. And that was Jordy Clarkson today. But that's a good way of maybe approaching it. Maybe we'll look at a DFS dart of the night at some point as well. Maybe we'll do that when we go real DFS heavy throughout the playoffs, because there's obviously that's what's happening in fantasy leagues. That's the fantasy that's happening in the playoffs. It's DFS. There's no seasonal stuff happening at that point. But Lou, that is it's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up so that I could clarify that. Let's get into these five games now, though. The first one was the Denver Nuggets and the Los Angeles Clippers. Yusuf Nurkic is making a lot of noise at the moment. It's probably 5 months too late for the people who invested, late round pick on him, which in the end means nothing. But he's putting up big numbers, much like we hoped he would be able to do, and what we saw the flashes from him last season. 24 minutes, 19-7, 3 assists and a block on 9-13 shooting. The Nuggets have got two really good centers. They've got him and they've got Nikola Jokic. Obviously, I would be very happy if they just split the minutes there, maybe 4 or 5 minutes of them playing together. With Ken Fareed, he's not out, but he's not healthy. He's been ready to play, but the coach has decided not to use him. Let's be honest, Fareed is not good. And when he's already dealing with a back problem and the season's lost, I can understand them not playing him. He is dressed and he is ready to go, but they're just not going to play him. Nurkic is a very, very interesting target. We talked about the Nuggets schedule already when we spoke about Augustine earlier. Nurkic could be a guy who gets you over the course of the week 5 blocks. He could get you 30 to 40 rebounds. Maybe not. Maybe that's pushing a little bit far. Maybe we're talking 25 to 35 rebounds. big field goal percentage. He's a really good steals guy for a big man as well. So he's a guy that there is a little bit of risk associated with picking him up, because what if they put Fareed back in and play Fareed 20 minutes? And then that takes minutes away from Joffrey Lavergne, some of it, but some of it from Nurkic as well. So that could be a concern. But Nurkic is playing decent minutes at the moment, and he's definitely producing on a very consistent basis. So he has to be looked at in majority of leagues. Bill Barton put up a nice night, actually. 13-3-3. He had a three, he had a steal, he had two blocks. That's fine. That's a really good performance from him. But at this point, we know that we can't trust him to do that regularly, that he's just as likely to play 26 minutes and put up 2 points as he is to put up a line like that. But the last four games have been encouraging. 14.5 points, four rebounds, three assists, 1.5 threes, a steal. But he's shooting 58% from the field, which we know that he isn't that guy. So that is likely to regress. And when the shot doesn't fall, Mike Malone just grabs him and goes, mate, you just put your ass here and you can sit down for the rest of the game. Because when it doesn't fall, he just doesn't engage, and nothing else seems to work for him. And that's the way that Malone has treated him. Your shot doesn't fall, you sit down. And that's the way a lot of coaches are dealing with players this year. We've seen that with Mirotić a lot in Chicago. And Barton is one of those guys as well that once things aren't going his way, that Malone will just go, well, I've got another guy I can put out there, so you can park your ass next to me and watch from here and enjoy the scenery. Fine guy to add, as I mentioned, they've got a pretty nice schedule, but don't be afraid to drop him if it comes to that. Gaz Harris, only the 29 minutes, 11 points, still had three triples and two steals. Not enough minutes for Gaz, but hey, I still prefer Gaz over Barton. I think that we know that Mike Malone prefers him over Billy, but whether he really reaches the heights of what he can do this season, yet to be seen. He's not a must-hold guy. Jokic, 5-9, two assists and a steal, not his best performance. I'd still be holding Jokic, though. We know what he can do in limited minutes. Darrell Arthur, 6-12 with a block. Moutier was terrible, 4-2 in 23 minutes, a steal, a block, but 2 of 15 shooting. Obviously really hurts. The turnovers are not a problem for Moutier really anymore. He'll have the occasional big night, but only had two here. He's cut them down to a significant degree, but his field goal percentage over the last 2 weeks is at 33%. Yeah, he's 75 from the line, but that field goal percentage is really, really hurting you, and it's hurting his playing time as well, and that's enabling DJ Augustin to get playing time. I would still be okay with holding on to Moutier and seeing what happens Monday, but you need to be able to deal with that field goal percentage. And surely you should be able to deal with it, because if you're this far into the season and you own Moutier, then you've already had to deal with absolutely putrid shooting for most of the season. The interesting thing about him, though, in the last 2 weeks, he's shooting 35% from three, 33% from the field. The last week, 29 from three, 28 from the field. So I don't really understand what's going on with him there. He will improve this area throughout his career. He will never be a high 40s guy, but I think he can be a low 40s guy up from 35. And I reckon we see him jump to maybe even a 39 to 40% season last year. That rookie to sophomore season, you see in general with guards a pretty big jump in their field goal percentage. So he could be a guy who does that next season. So he's not a must-own guy at the moment, but he's also not a guy that I absolutely have to get rid of. Joffrey Lavergne had 10 points in his 18 minutes, and he's the third on the center totem pole at the moment. For the Clippers, Wes Johnson got hot. He was 5 of 6 for 13 points. He had 3 threes, 4 rebounds, 3 steals and a block. We know that Wes Johnson is one of the more underrated triple one guys in the league, but of late, he's been doing basically nothing. And this is a big performance from him here, but I'd put zero faith in it. You get three more opportunities for him to get minutes in the mid to high 20s with Blake Griffin returning on Sunday, but I don't really trust it happening. There's too many other pieces of crap there that they're going to mix in. Luke Marmute, Paul Pierce, Jamal Crawford, Jeff Green, all these guys are going to get minutes. And there's not going to be many nights that Chris Paul plays just 26 minutes and Jordan plays 29 and Redick plays 23 and Crawford plays 21. So this is one that's a bit of out of the blue from Johnson, and I'm not overreacting to it. Chrissy Paul, 14-6-9 with a steal, a block, and two triples. A nice night in very, very few minutes. And Jeff Green had 13-6 with two steals in his 29 minutes. He is not a 12-10 league guy at this point. JJ Redick, 12 points with two threes and two steals. Just doing what you need to do. But remember, again, low minutes for him. And Jamal Crawford, 21 minutes, 14 points and two assists. I was absolutely staggered when I saw the report coming from an NBA players survey that they overwhelmingly think that Jamal Crawford is the sixth man of the year. Staggered. He is shooting less than 40% from the field. He is shooting 32% from three. He's chucking 12 shots a game up. He doesn't pass the ball. He doesn't play defense. What does he do? Why? I understand he's been that guy in the past. And you know, you go back to 2013-14, where he was averaging 18.5 points, 16.5 the year before that. Yeah, that's good when you're shooting 44%. But when you're under 40% and you're at 32% from three, and that's your job to be a shooter, why do the NBA players think he's the sixth man of the year? Granted, there's not a great amount of candidates for sixth man of the year, but I can find plenty that are better. Andre Iguodala is a much better option as sixth man of the year than what Jamal Crawford is. There are plenty of other guys that I would rather have win that award than Crawford. So I was flummoxed that the players were so adamant that Crawford would be the sixth man of the year. Austin Rivers continues to get 20 minutes a game. He had 22 here, 8 points with 2 assists. He does nothing with them, though. We rely upon him just for deeper leagues. And Cole Aldrich, let's do a Cole Aldrich check. 16 minutes, 5 points, 1 block. So gets us that block again. Definitely the best block stream guy, probably outside of John Henson at this point. The Houston Rockets and the Indiana Pacers, Jim Harden, 34, 8, and 8, 4 threes and a steal. Just doing absolutely everything he can, but it's not really working for the Rockets, unfortunately. Another loss for them. Dwighty Howard, 11 and 10 with 2 blocks. He was 5 of 6 from the field. Just the fact that he can't get shots, that he had 6 shots and Michael Beasley had 11 is really disappointing with the way that Bickerstaff's running things. But 11 and 10 and 2 blocks and a high percentage, you'll take that from your fantasy team, but you'd prefer more. Trevor Reza, 14 and 2 with a couple of threes. Yeah, whatever. That's okay. And Clint Capella went 9 and 7 in his 18 minutes. Let's go back to Mike Beasley. He played 22 minutes, 9 and 7. So the Beasley roller coaster continues to go up and down. Predicting what he's going to do is becoming a challenge. It's going to be 28 minutes and 18 points, or it's going to be 20 minutes and 5 points. It's really hard to know. He's not an appealing guy to me to own for next week, especially with the Rockets playing just 3 games. But the Rockets play 3 games, but one of them is on Tuesday and one of them is on Thursday. So if you're looking to add him, you will get 2 games out of him. There's no doubt you get 2 games out of him. But do you get 2 decent games? Do you get 2 shit games? Like, what do you get out of him? But at least if you're adding him, it's not a horrible situation like the Lakers, where they play Monday and Wednesday and you might not even be able to get them into an active spot. Tuesday or Thursday, you will. So Rockets guys, despite having a 3-game schedule, have got a pretty nice distribution of when the games actually occur. Donatas Motiejunas starts again, 16 minutes, 8 and 3. I just really need them to play him more minutes for no particular reason. I don't own him in any leagues or anything like that. I just want to see him get out there because he is the best of that power forward bunch by a significant amount. Corey Brewer, 8 and 5 in his 23 minutes. He gathered 2 steals, and that's really the only thing that you can expect from him. And Pat Beverley had 6 points in 26 minutes with 3 assists. I expect Beverley to be better than that moving forward. Onto the Pacers, Monte, after that 3-point stinker in Brooklyn, went 23-6-7. He had 3 steals, he had a block, he had a triple. A very, very big game from Monte, so you're very happy with that on the last day of a matchup. Paul George, 25-11, 4 triples, a steal, and a block. That's a big performance as well. And Jan Mahinmi, 19-11-4 with a block. 8 of 12 shooting, and unfortunately 3 of 8 from the free throw line. But as I've mentioned before, he's a great punt free throw ad. He's about 57% from the field, from the line. And it's not completely must punt, but it requires a very specific team to be able to overcome it. But still, Mahinmi should be looked at as a guy that you want to own at this point. Miles Turner, I touched on him earlier. He had 0 points in 19 minutes. He missed all 5 of his shots. He had 3 rebounds, but at least he got you 2 steals. He got you a block. So that helped a little bit of his value there. Clearly not the best performance from Miles. And George Hill wasn't too far behind, going 3-3-3. In his 29 minutes, Patrick Beverley is an absolute terror for point guards, and that really affects DFS and seasonal leagues. Ty Lawson had 5 assists in his 14 minutes against his former team, and really not a lot else to talk about with this team, except CJ Miles dropped a couple of threes and 10 points in his 15 minutes of playing time. The Dallas Mavericks and the Sacramento Kings. Good old Salah Mejri started. He had 2 fouls in the first 110 seconds and sat his ass down for the rest of the first half. He finished with just 7 minutes played, 2 points, 2 rebounds, and 1 block. Now, people are rightfully pissed about Mejri, but I mentioned it yesterday, and I mentioned it the day before when they played the Warriors. Shit matchup against the Warriors. The Warriors will go small. It's going to limit him. Terrible matchup against the Kings. Boogie Cousins will get you into foul trouble, and that's exactly what happened. Now, the Mavericks play the Nuggets. Jusuf Nurkic, Nikola Jokic, as much as I love them, they're not the matchup problem that it is for the that is like for playing Boogie or playing the Warriors. Now, the concern is that they went with JaVale McGee to start the second half, who literally hasn't seen the court in months. What do they do with Mejri? We don't know at this point, but I would just wait until we hear more information. As I mentioned, they play Monday, so you might get a 25-minute 13 and 10 with two blocks game out of Mejri in that one. It's a matchup that is set up for him, but you could also get 15 minutes out of him. So it's something we need to we need to watch. We need to really scout what Carlisle's saying, try and get some information from their beat reporters and see if there's any information about what they're going to do. But this was just a terrible, terrible situation to go up against Cousins, and I don't imagine he'll be playing 7 minutes moving forward. He would likely get more run than that, but it remains to be seen. Ray Felton, 15, 4, and 5, two steals and a three. A big game from him, and he's going to continue to get 30-plus, I would imagine. Devin Harris, 11, 3, and 4 with three steals and two triples. Has not been that guy for a while, so I'm not really looking too much into him. And Wes Matthews, 12, 3, and 3 with a couple of triples in 35 minutes. Not the best game, but not terrible. With Dirk back, David Lee back down to 14 minutes, 12, 6, and 2. And that's probably the range he'll stay in, that 14 to 18-minute range. And that is not going to be a standard league sort of guy, I don't think. Dwight Powell getting back into action. I really like Dwight Powell, but he's struggled a lot this year. 11 and 6 in 16 minutes with a block. I'm not sure he gets those sort of minutes moving forward. JJ Barea in the blowout, 14, 3, and 3 in 27 minutes. With Darren Williams missing Monday as well, I expect Barea to go back to 30 minutes and be a really good stream option for that. Dirk struggled, as Lou tweeted at me earlier. 27 minutes for Dirk, 14 and 5 with two triples. And Justin Anderson, that's 20 minutes in a couple of games in a row for Anderson. 11, 3, and 2 in 21 minutes. He is definitely a deep league guy to keep an eye on with Parsons out. Carlisle did mention that he wanted to give him big minutes, and by big, I guess it means more than the 2 minutes a game he was getting before. But if he gets 21 to 22 in your 16 to 18 team leagues, he's going to be interesting. He can hit threes. He can actually block shots. He's a pretty decent scorer. He'll be an interesting guy to watch. Zaza Pachulia had 2 points in his 14 minutes, and at least he got 14 minutes. That's the biggest positive I can say there. The other thing I can say for Mejri is JaVale McGee started the second half, and he went 2-2 in 13 minutes, so it's not like he played well either. For the Kings, Rajon Rondo, 28 minutes, 11, 4, and 11, two threes and two steals. The Kings absolutely smashed the Mavericks here, so the minutes were restricted for a lot of their big-name guys. Boogie, 20 and 12, 5 assists and 2 steals, but Boogie is not going to play on Monday, it appears. And I talked about this on the last couple of podcasts, about this foot surgery he's got planned for the end of the season. The problem is, when does the end of the season start for Boogie? You can't do shit about it if you own Cousins. You can't drop him. You need to just play it out until we hear anything. But you need to have your finger very, very quickly poised on the add button for Kufos. And probably Cauley Stein already at the moment. But Kufos is the guy who's going to benefit the most if Cousins... he won't benefit the most. Cauley Stein will be good, but Kufos will get a massive bump. So that's where you need to look. But making a preemptive ad of him, it might work out. But it also could mean you're holding Kufos through 3 games of 10 minutes. And that, at this point in the year, is really, really difficult to do. Now, Kufos was great here. 10 and 6 with 2 blocks in 15 minutes. But that's not the norm. Seth Curry got another start. He was really good, actually. 23 minutes for Seth, 14 points, 2 triples, 3 assists and a steal. George Karl clearly doesn't think very highly of him. When Marco Bellinelli comes back, does that take the minutes away from Seth? Yet to be seen. Also, Darren Collison is suffering a severe minutes cut as well. He's played only 27 here, 17, 2 and 4 with a steal and a 3. That's 3 in a row where he's failed to get over 27 minutes. I still think you want to hold Collison, but under 30 minutes, he might be a casualty of scheduling for next week. Quincy Acey continues to start. I don't know who's been the worst starter all season. I don't know if it's been him. I don't know if it's been Noah Vonleh. I don't know if it's Sasha Vujicic to start the season. But Acey doesn't deserve to play in the NBA most nights, let alone start and thieve 17 minutes. But 7-3 for Acey here. And Rudy Gay just is terrible at the moment. I don't know what's going on. He must be hurt. 26 minutes for Gay, 9-2 with 2 steals. It might seem dumb, but with the way that he's playing, I would really look into whether he is someone that you need to hold on to. I probably wouldn't have the balls to do it, but in the last month, he's ranked outside the top 100. That's a month's worth of action. He is not providing anything, really. Either rebounding is down, the scoring is down, the steals are okay. He's just, I don't know. I would probably hold, but he's really been poor. Omri Caspi had a nice triple one with a 10-3-4. He's still just a deeper league sort of guy to me. The next game, the Philadelphia 76ers and the Golden State Warriors, Ish Smith, apparently a dead-eye dick now, 9 of 14 from the field, 20 points including 2 threes, 3 rebounds, 10 assists and 3 steals. Do not expect that sort of sharp shooting from him moving forward. Carl Landry, now the Sixers are without Nerlens Noel and they're possibly going to be without him for more games. Jahlil Okafor is out. Rishon Holmes is dealing with an Achilles problem. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see him again this season. And then Jeremy Grant left this game with a quad strain, which is going to cost him, you would think, a week or so. So their front court is going to consist of Alton Brand. It is going to consist of Christian Wood, who just got signed from the D-League, and it's going to consist of Landry. Landry played 25 minutes here and went 22-8 with 3 assists and a steal. Now, Landry provides nothing outside of points, rebounds, and field goal percentage, but if he gets close to 30 minutes, then the amount that he's going to do in those categories could be super valuable to you. So he is not someone to write off, despite the fact that you may have forgotten that Carl Landry was playing in the league. The problem with that is that the Sixers play 3 games next week. Now, they do play on a light Tuesday, so that is a great opportunity to stream Landry in. And if your team, if your 10 active spots are full on Monday, then adding Landry now to be ready for Tuesday is not a bad move. I don't imagine that Holmes or Noel or Grant all play on Tuesday. We could hear more news on that. Obviously, it's more than a day away, but I don't imagine those guys play on Tuesday. Bob Cove hit 4 triples. He went 16-11 in 32 minutes. He had a steal as well. He is going to carry this team as much as he can. And Alton Brand, 10-3-2 with 2 blocks in 17 minutes. He is going to have to play minutes. So deep leagues, 16 teams, 18 teams, you need to look at Alton Brand. Isaiah Cannon's 3-pointers continued, 15 with 3 triples, 2 assists. The minutes for him are just not going to be quite there to be a standard league hold. And Hollis Thompson, the drop-off happened 4-4-4 with a steal and a block on 2 of 10 shooting. Nicky Stauskas had a huge dunk. What a sentence that is. 9 points with a 3, 4 rebounds, 3 assists and 2 steals for Sauce Castillo, but he is not someone that I'm looking at in a 12-team format. Probably it from that team. Oh, TJ McConnell, actually. 9-4-2 with 2 steals in 22 minutes. He's a great assists and steals stream if he's going to continue to get 20 minutes a night. Klay Thompson hit 7 more triples. He had 40 points, 2 assists, and 1 block. So not many other peripheral numbers, but a great field goal percentage going 15 of 27. Draymond went 13-11-11 with 2 threes, a steal, and 3 blocks. And Steph had 23-8 with 4 steals and 2 triples. So the big three putting up big numbers. But probably the most interesting guy here was Maurice Spates, who in only 20 minutes had 17 points, including 2 triples, had 7 rebounds and 3 assists. He is a guy that puts up numbers at such a ridiculous rate that you just wish you could extrapolate it out to 30 minutes. Now, it's never going to happen, but over the last 2 weeks, he's inside the top 150 in less than 50 minutes a game. Not 50, in less than 15 minutes a game. But he's averaging 10 points. He's hitting a 3 a game and 4 rebounds and a block at 51-82. Like, these are really useful numbers. So you're a 14-team leaguer. You need to be looking at Mo Spates. You need, in a 16-team league, absolutely you need to be looking at him because they're using him as this sort of big man spark plug off the bench, and he's providing. I was interested in Harry Barnes in this game. I thought he's going to play 32 minutes. It doesn't matter if it's a blowout. He's going to get playing time. It's against the Sixers. He just remains absolutely terrible. 10 points, 2 rebounds, 1 assist, and 1 steal. And in saying this, I am probably going to end up drafting Harry Barnes in leagues next year because guys coming off serious ankle injuries, it impacts the rest of their season in a massive, massive way. We've seen it with plenty of players in the past. Jim Butler is one of those ones a couple of years ago when he suffered that ankle sprain, came back, and was never the same guy. Your neck minute comes out and he's a top 20 guy. Now, I'm thinking that's going to be Harry Barnes, but it does impact guys. And there's a few other guys that are in my, Rick Rubio, another one of those guys, that when you come back from that ankle injury, you're not the same guy. A whole off-season of rehab, he might have surgery on it, whatever he needs to do. He might even go to a new team. I think that Harry Barnes, as bad as he's been this year and as much shit as I've heaped on him, he is going to be better next year, and he will be a surprise player next year. A lot of people had him as a sleeper coming into this year. I wasn't so on board with that. But next year, I think that he could be that guy. A lot of it does depend on where he goes to, though. Andy Bogut, 0 points in 13 minutes with 5 rebounds. The trials and tribulations of owning Andrew Bogut. The last game of the day was the Wizards and the Lakers. Of course, Brad Beal had to leave the court with an injury. He did return and play 29 minutes, but it was bad. 4-6-3 with a steal and a 3. Just be thankful that he played out the game, I guess. Johnny Wall, 22-5-13, and Marcin Gortat, another double-double, 16-10 with a couple of blocks, and he looks great when they're actually giving him the minutes that he deserves, and Whitman should be crucified for not doing that for most of the season. Otto Porter, 14-6 with 2 threes and a steal. He's been really solid lately. He's not a great player by any means, but he's solid enough to be owned in fantasy. And with Markieff Morris dealing with a calf strain, Nanabe started, played 30 minutes, and had 10 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 steals. Now, my trust of Nanabe playing 30 minutes for a sustained stretch is minimal, but we don't need a sustained stretch. We might need a week. And I don't imagine we're going to get Markieff back within this week. We could. We haven't heard any exact time frame yet, but Nene, if they're going to run that situation and play the two bigs, which they should, he becomes interesting. The Wizards, they play 4 games. They have a great back-to-back Tuesday, Wednesday against the Warriors and the Kings. They play the Suns on Friday. So there's a couple of good games for them coming up. So Nene should be on your watch list and on your targets if we hear more about Markieff. With Markieff out, JJ Hixon got back to the rotation. I bet you forgot he played for the Wizards. 14-5 in 20 minutes with a couple of steals. Don't get overly excited about him. In fact, he went to the line 12 times. He hit 4 of them. That's not ideal. Garrett Temple is bad. Marcus Thornton had 4 points in his 10 minutes. And Ramon Sessions went 11-4-2 in his 22 minutes. Jared Dudley, even with Markieff out, could only manage 11 minutes for 0 points. So Nene is probably the guy you want to look at there. On to the Lakers. Larry Nance played 27 minutes, 9-7 with 4 steals, but he will not play Monday. So any value in him is done because he's going to be sitting these back-to-backs. Julius Randle off his triple-double, not quite as good, but 14-7 with 2 steals is solid. And Kobe had 17 points with 3 threes, and he's going to make every effort to play every game down the stretch here. So if you're punting field goals and Kobe's available, not the worst guy to look at. Roy Hibbert is the worst guy to look at. Brandon Bass went scoreless, but he did have 7 rebounds and 3 assists in only 17 minutes, but he'll have a bigger role on Monday, so he's a decent stream option for probably a deeper 12 league guy with a solid percentages and the points and rebounds he can offer. Lou Williams, only 11 points in 20 minutes. I thought he was due for a big game with Russell out, but obviously Russell played, so that limited what he was able to do. And Marcelo Huertas had 9 points in his 14 minutes, adding 3 assists, and he really just remains an assists streamer at this point. All right, let's look at the schedules for next week. Matt Smith has written a detailed article about this over on Basketball Monster. We have spoken at length about the Nets and Bulls having 5 games this week. I've spoken about it at length throughout the last couple of days as well, especially about a guy, say like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who, yes, 5 games is fine, but what if he sits a back-to-back? What if he plays 16 minutes a game for those 5 games? It's not that valuable. But you do need to have a look at it and see where you can make ads of these guys. Shane Larkin's a great one for the Nets. Sergei Karasev's a decent guy to look at. Yeah, for the Bulls, Nikola Mirotic is very up and down, but maybe it works out for you. Taj Gibson, obviously, you want to look and make sure he is owned on the Bulls. And Bojan Bogdanović, obviously, on the Nets. Dougie McDermott, if you need points, he'll provide. Yeah, not much else, though. So there's a lot to look at. Now, there's 3 teams who play a back-to-back coming through Monday, Tuesday. The Bulls, the Nets, and the Thunder have a back-to-back. So you've got to use your ads to your advantage. Where can you get these extra games? You know, the Wizards have that nice Warriors-Kings Tuesday, Wednesday back-to-back. But remember, there are plenty of days this week where you won't be able to use guys that you add. That's the concern. That's something you need to look at. Monday, we've got 10 games. You might find a spot on your roster. You might not. Tuesday, 6. Fine. You'll fit someone in. Wednesday, 9. Again, maybe. Thursday, 6. Beautiful. Friday, 10. Probably not. Saturday, 5 games. Absolutely. Sunday, 11. Probably not. So you're looking at Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday as the days when you're really going to be able to take advantage of teams that play. So you're looking at teams like the Bulls who play Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, which is a perfect schedule to add these players in. Is there anyone else that plays that schedule? I think they're the only team who actually... Well, no, that's not true. The Indiana Pacers have another great one. The Bulls on Tuesday, the Magic on Thursday, the Sixers on Saturday. They've got a great schedule. So you can get 3 really great games out of them from making one addition. Obviously, it makes no difference for a weekly lock league, but if you're trying to minimize your weekly additions in a daily changes league, the Pacers guys, you're going to get bang for your buck. Not by adding someone who then plays on a Wednesday and you have to sit their ass down, or plays on the Monday and then they're not getting involved that way. So you really need to have a look at these things and try and work out the best way to work it on your team. So there's only those 2 teams that play those 3 days. They have a really solid schedule. That's that's the way to look at it this way, and then make your additions. And it's going to be very much variable for every team, because I might have 11 guys go Monday. You might have 9. So you might have someone to add in on Monday. And it depends on each day who's got what and who's got guys playing. The other thing you need to watch, and you really can't predict this stuff, is back-to-backs and who's going to rest. You would think that the Bulls having two back-to-backs this week, Pau Gasol, probably not going to play in both of them. The Nets, Brook Lopez, I would be shocked if he plays in all 5 games. Just the fact that they're not playing for anything, and he's already had a game or two off this year just for resting purposes. That's a concern. What other sort of resting issues do we have? They're probably the main ones. Nothing really stands out as being a real massive resting concern. The Pelicans in the middle of the week, Wednesday, Thursday, they got a back-to-back. So you would expect guys who might be struggling, maybe Ryan Anderson if he's back, or Drew Holiday, they may sit one of those out as well. And then at the end of the week, Detroit and Philadelphia have back-to-backs on Friday, Saturday. Don't imagine Detroit sits anyone. Philadelphia, they're already banged up enough anyway, so that's probably not going to be too much of a concern for those guys. All right, I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to do our preview for DFS for Monday. Back in action to talk DFS. There are 10 games on Monday, so it's a pretty busy schedule. At this point, there aren't many spreads released. Only for 3 of the 7 games have I got the spread details just yet, so obviously things will change once we hear a little bit more about over-unders and spreads and that sort of stuff in the games. Let's get stuck into them. But actually, before I do that, we've added a few more things over at Basketball Monster on the daily projections page, which I think are really important to pay attention to. The ability to search through each player's individual performance against their upcoming opponent. So you can add that in as a comparison column, like how many points they score against the Kings or against the Suns or against their upcoming opponent. I think that is super tremendous to look at. Plus, the price changes. So how much has the price changed over the last day, over the last week? You can specify what time frame you want to look at with price changes on the various providers. And you can also, obviously, this is something you've been able to do before as well, is by have a look at the per 36 values, which is something I'm going to start incorporating in now that we've got access to some of these stats when talking about these daily projections and daily picks. The first game is the Brooklyn Nets and the Miami Heat. Before we get into that again, an overarching thought on this slate, I reckon that cheap point guards might be the way to go, because there's a few cheap point guard options who could be very, very useful, especially in a tournament. So that we'll talk about that as we go through. Let's start now with Brooklyn and Miami, third time's the charm. The Heat are favored by 10, and the total is 211 points for this one. Let's start with those point guards, and one of those cheap point guards I'm mentioning is Shane Larkin, who's at 3,700. Now, he's back home. He went to college in Miami. Does that have any impact? Well, sometimes we've seen that it has. So that's something to pay attention to. But he is the starting point guard. He's priced at 3,700. He's got an average of 24 points across the last 3. He dropped 26 in his last one. Over his last five games, he's averaging 30 points per 36 minutes, which is not bad. And at 3,700, you're pretty expectant of him to get 25 points. The problem being that he plays the Heat, and they're really good at defending point guard, so that's somewhat of a concern. But with his salary not moving, and you have to imagine that he gets to 20 points here pretty comfortably. And at 3,700, that makes him someone I'm definitely interested in. Now, there is a risk because Tony Brown could easily do the wrong thing and split the minutes and put Don Sloan back in. But I am pretty confident that Brown is going to give 26-plus to Larkin here and make him a pretty solid option. On the flip side, Goran Dragic is at 6,800. He has a pretty tasty matchup against the Nets, but he's not doing a huge amount at the moment. He's averaging 32 across his last five, which is fine. 28 across his last three, which is not so fine. And historically, in the last three matchups against the Nets, he's only putting up 26 points, which is obviously not a massive amount. His salary has also risen $100, which is not what you want to see. Not overly confident in using Goran. Don Sloan, 4,300. Terrible matchup. Backup role. Costs more than the starter. He's not someone that we should be interested in, I wouldn't have thought. Shooting guards. Sergei Karasev, who put up a pretty decent performance last time, is listed as a small forward, so we'll get to him in a sec. Dwayne Wade at 7,000. This is a nice matchup for Dwayne. He's averaging 30 points across his last three. He's averaging 29 across his last five. You need him to do more than that. Now, in the last three against the Nets, this is where this stat comes really interesting. He's averaging 42 points in just 31 minutes. He's had a salary drop of $200. I think that Dwayne Wade here is in a pretty decent spot to put up a 30-plus line. 35 should be not too crazy to expect from him. So I do like him here. Joshy Richardson, for as good as he's been in standard leagues, he's not putting up the sort of DFS value that you would hope. He's only averaging less than 20 across his last three, and he's at 4,400. Not all that keen here. Sean Kilpatrick has been solid. He's at 3,800, and he's putting up really nice numbers, 20 points across his last three. He's had a 31-point game across the last five, which is obviously great at 3,800. He is a nice punt tournament option, but I don't imagine his ceiling's all that high. Markel Brown's not playing much. Wayne Ellington's out of the rotation, and Gerald Green gets about 2 minutes a game. So he's not interesting. Now the small forwards, where there is a little bit more interest. Sergei Karasev is at minimum salary. He dropped 32 in the last game. I think that you have to think about what sort of minutes he's going to get. Will he play 25 to 26? I would be hopeful that that's what he gets. I think that he should be getting that sort of playing time. At 3,500, I think that Karasev is definitely within range to put up pretty good numbers. I think that he's shown over the last two or three times he's played decent minutes that he can handle the ball, he can distribute, he can rebound, he can score. He's a minimum salary, and I do like him as a tournament because he's got 30-point upside here. Joe Johnson, is it a revenge game situation? His salary has dropped $300, which is very appealing. He's now at 5,100, but he has been brutally bad. He's averaging under 20 in the last five. That is not good. Do you really believe this is a revenge game situation? If you do, you should like this spot, especially given how easy it is for shooting guards or small forwards, to score against the Nets. At 5,100, he needs to get to 25 points to really have an impact, and I don't think that's crazy for Joe Johnson, so I would be including him. Justice Winslow is in a real nice matchup here as well. In his last three games against the Nets, he's averaging 25 points in 35 minutes, and at 4,200, you'd have to say that makes sense. But he's not doing a massive amount at the moment. But if there's any game that he's going to thrive, it's going to be this one. I probably steer clear of Justice. Bojan Bogdanovic at 5,000. He's been okay. He's been putting up numbers. Great for standard leagues, but not really doing enough for DFS at the moment, especially against the Heat, who do have an ability to shut down that position. And Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, yeah, great steal numbers, but it doesn't translate to DFS. He's averaging just 17 points across the last three, and he's at 4,100, so he's not someone I'm going to be all that intrigued in. Power forwards, Luol Deng at 6,200. He has had a price rise now of $200. He dropped 37 in the last game. Really easy matchup against the Nets. Not a tough spot here at all. 30 points is what you're looking for from him. He hasn't been giving us that sort of level of late, apart from the 37 in the last game, but he's definitely got the ability to do that. His history against the Nets is not good, with just a 21 average across the last three. I think, though, that you should be expecting close to 30. It makes him a decent play, but not spectacular. Amari Stoudemire, no thanks. Thad Young, 74, has really been down lately. This is not a good matchup for him either. He hasn't performed well against the Heat also, and his numbers just haven't been really, really giving us that sort of value for $7,400. Thomas Robinson hasn't played the last two games. Chris McCullough, Josh McRoberts, there's no interest in any of those guys. At center, let's look at Hassan Whiteside, who's at 8,400. He dropped a 51 in the last game, 44 across the last three. He's been a little bit down against the Nets, only averaging 37 across those last three games. But at 8,400, you've got him and Brook Lopez, who are both in pretty decent situations here. 8,100 for Lopez, 84 for Whiteside. I probably take Whiteside, but it's pretty close. Now, Whiteside has been outperforming Lopez over the last five and over the last three. He's got a higher floor than what Lopez does. I think they're both really solid options, though. But if I'm picking one, it's going to be Whiteside. The Oklahoma City Thunder and the Toronto Raptors is the next game up. Here we go. The Thunder are favored by 3. The total is 211.5. Corey Joseph is at 3,500. So he's at minimum salary. You need 18 points out of him to really bring home enough value. But he's not even giving you that. He's averaging 14 across his last five. So he's not a guy who racks up stats. Kyle Lowry's dropped down now to 8,600. That's becoming more appealing, especially in a matchup against the Thunder and against Russ Westbrook. 8,600 for Lowry, coming off two subpar games. He hasn't been good against the Thunder in his last three, averaging just 23 points. That's not good. But I do have a bit of confidence in him getting over 40 here against Westbrook in a game which figures to be tight. I think that Lowry is an okay guy to look at if you're going to go with an expensive point guard. Westbrook, on the other hand, it's an extra $2,000 you have to spend over Kyle Lowry. But his last three games against the Raptors, 59-point average. He's averaging 49 across his last five. You should hope for 50 points here for Westbrook. I imagine he gets to 36 or 37 minutes. Probably we've got him predicted at 35, but you can't go overly ambitious on the minutes. I think he can get a few more than that, depending on the way the game plays out. If you're going expensive, I do like Westbrook here because I think that 50 points should be in play, but it's a big chunk of change at 10,600 when you can add a couple of cheap guys in, and one of them being Larkin and a couple of the other guys we're going to touch on soon as well. DeMar DeRozan is now under 8,000, and that makes him interesting. He's at 7,900, has been putting up solid numbers, but nothing great. It's just a 32 average across his last five, but we know he can go for 40. I think they're going to need a lot out of him in this game. And Andre Robertson's a pretty good defender, but it doesn't translate into reduction in fantasy stats really by that much. So he's someone that we can look at. I think that he is definitely one of the better. If you're going to spend up on shooting guards, he's one of the better guys to have a peek at. Terrence Ross has been out the last couple with that thumb problem. We wouldn't use him anyway, nor Randy Foyd, nor Andre Robertson. Dion Waiters, his salary has dropped $300 lately. He's down to 3,600. He's had a 29-point game. This is not probably the best matchup to use him, but in a tournament, maybe it works out for you. Also, if Terrence Ross is out, Normie Powell's at 3,700. He dropped 24 in the last game. He's averaging 19 across his last three. Not a bad look. If Ross is out, we expect him to get 20-plus minutes, maybe even 30 minutes, and he could have a decent game. So Powell is someone that I would definitely consider if we hear that Ross is out. Small forwards, still no Damari Carroll, obviously. Kevin Durant, 10,300. Fine, using him. He's averaging 50 across the last three against the Raptors. You expect 50 out of him here. He's just pretty good. That's all I've got to say about that. James Johnson, Kyle Singler, Josh Huestis, Bruno Caboclo. None of those guys are obviously going to impact fantasy. Some power forwards. Luis Scola at 3,900 has been playing well lately. He's averaging 22 points across his last five. He's getting 24 minutes a game. The question you have to ask yourself is, will he play more minutes than Patrick Patterson, which has happened the last two games? I'm a bit hesitant about it. I think that he still plays over 20, though, and he remains an interesting guy to look at. Pat at 3,800 had a big game in the last one, had 26 points, but that's really not what he's about. Neither of those guys are great options. Serge Ibaka at 5,400, it's a horrible matchup that the Raptors have been really able to reduce the production of power forwards for most of the season, but he's only at 5,400, so I don't completely hate it. You need, if he gets 27 points, I think you're going to be pretty wrapped. He's averaging 29 across the last three, but I put very little faith in what Ibaka can do at the moment. At center, the Jonas Valanciunas at 6,100 has looked really good lately. He's averaging 33.5 across the last three. It all comes down to what sort of minutes that Dwayne Casey is going to give him. In the past, he has struggled against Oklahoma. His price has risen by 500. All these things are not working in his favor, especially, and the ease ranking for the Thunder is not good for centers. So I'm not sure that I'm going to be overly invested in Valanciunas, but his recent form has been impressive. Enes Kanter has also been brilliant lately. He's averaging 28 across the last three. He's now at 5,600. To me, though, I don't think at 5,600 I want to get 27 points. That's fine. It's a break-even 5x nice value, but it's probably not going to be the best value on the board. Steve Adams, no thanks. And Bismack Biyombo, he's well down in his role now that Valanciunas is back and firing, and Casey's actually relying upon him a little bit more than usual. The next game up, the New York Knicks and the New Orleans Pelicans. Point guards. Jose Calderon played just 21 minutes in the last game, but he has been averaging 30 minutes over the last five. He's at 4,200. I would much prefer that at 3,800. Against the Pelicans, though, he does become interesting to look at. I probably won't use him. Norris Cole, he's questionable for every game. He never plays. I don't know whether he's going to play in this, but I wouldn't use him even if he does. Obviously, if he is out, then Tim Frazier and Tony Douglas get significant bumps. Frazier is averaging 22 points across the last three, Douglas at 24, but Douglas is at 5,800. We don't want to spend 5,800 on Douglas. 4,000 for Frazier is definitely more appealing. It's a good matchup against the Knicks. He's averaging those 29 minutes across his last three games. He's playing more minutes than what Douglas is. So if Cole is out and if Drew Holiday is out, of course, then 4,000 on Tim Frazier is definitely an investment that we can make. Drew Holiday himself, we don't know if he's going to play with that sore little toe. He's at 8,200. You would hope that he would go for 40 against the Knicks if he plays, but we don't know if he's going to play at this point. He is only averaging 25 against the Knicks across his last three games, but that's just in 29 minutes. So I would imagine that he would go for 30 or 34 minutes in this game around that sort of range and be able to put up decent numbers. But we don't know if he's going to play at the moment. I apologize. My voice is completely cracking up on me. Aaron Aflalo at 4,400 in a bench role. He's not good. He's not good in a starter's role either, but he's definitely not a DFS play in a bench role. Sasha Vujicic and Langston Galloway, they're not tickling my fancy. Small forwards, Mallow. 8,700 for Mallow. He has averaged 39 against this team across the last three. He dropped 43 in the last game. I think at 8,700, he is an okay option, but it's definitely not going to blow us away. I don't imagine he's got many 50-point games left in him at this point of the season. I think that he's more of a 37 to 39 sort of player, which is fine, but 8,700 is just pushing a little bit too high. Alonzo G had 30 points in the last game. He's played 41 minutes in back-to-back games, and he is at minimum salary. If Cole and if Holiday are out, he is absolutely a tournament option. He is really bad, but in 41 minutes, you should be able to accumulate 20 fantasy points, if not more. So he comes into play there. Luke Babbitt's salary has risen by $900. That pretty much takes me out of the Luke Babbitt business. He did have 26 points in the last game, but his role is variable coming off the bench, and it's not good. Jordan Hamilton played 36 minutes in his first game for the Pelicans, dropped 20 points. He didn't play 36 minutes. He played 24 minutes. His price is 3,600. He had 20 points. That's pretty decent, but it's going to require Cole and Holiday to be out for me to consider him, and even then, it's just a risky tournament play. The power forwards.
Percentages.
He's looked good lately, definitely. He put up 31 points in 41 minutes. He hasn't really done that well against the Pelicans so far. But at 6,700 in a team that's missing Ryan Anderson, Anthony Davis, who's going to guard him? Dante Cunningham. Cunningham's a pretty good defender, but you should get 30 points out of Chris Stapps. I just don't know whether that's going to be enough at his 6,700 salary. The minutes are definitely back for him, though. Dante Cunningham will play big minutes. He will also do nothing. Derek Williams, Kevin Serafin, Lou Amundson, they're probably not going to be worth paying attention to. At center, Robin Lopez. He's at 5,800. This is a really good matchup for him. His salary has dropped 20. He hasn't performed well against the Pelicans lately, only averaging under 20 points in 22 minutes across the last three. But in the last five games, he's had a 51-point game. He's averaging 30 points across his last five. He's at 5,800, under 6,000. 30 points should be the aim for him. Alexei Ajinsa, who knows what they're going to do with him. He remains an intriguing tournament play because he did have that 33-point outing, but then he also had an 18-point game in 21 minutes in the last game. It really depends on how they're going to use him. If we hear that they're going to run him big minutes as a center, which the Pelicans refuse to tell us really any information most of the time, so it's going to be hard to get that info out, but he would be obviously intriguing at only 3,800, but he's not a cash game play. Omer Asik at 3,900, probably not, doesn't do a lot, doesn't do enough for me. Atlanta and Chicago, no spread released for this one just yet. I don't know what sort of injury news we're waiting for, really. Anyway, let's get into the point guards. 4,400 for Dennis Schroeder. It's a really, really, when you play the Bulls, it's great for every position. So Schroeder at 4,400, that salary has dropped an extra $100. He's averaging 26 points against the Bulls across the last three games in only 18 minutes. He's averaging 25 points across his last three games in only 20 minutes. Do you think that Dennis Schroeder will get you 25 points? That's the question you have to ask yourself. Everything is adding up to that. He is basically, over his last five games, he is a fantasy point per minute. So if you think he plays 24 minutes, then he's going to get 24 points. And then you get the Bulls bump in that, which should be 26 to 27 points. And he is an interesting tournament option. I have to say the same for Jeff Teague, who's got a great matchup here. Is he worth looking at? At 6,300, he's averaging 33 points against the Bulls in the last three. That's really impressive. He's averaging 28 across the last three games here. He dropped 35. This is a great matchup. Remember, you play the Bulls, you put up numbers. That's pretty much how it works these days. So Teague is another guy that I consider, but I don't absolutely love. Derrick Rose has been horrible in the last couple. He struggled recently against the Hawks as well. Only a 28 average in these last five. And when you're paying 6,800, he needs to do more than that. Shooting guard. Speaking of people who need to do more than what they're currently doing, Jim Butler is struggling. He is still priced at 8,000. He has been good against the Hawks in the past, a 35 average across the last three. But you need 40 out of him. And I just have no confidence in him being able to do that, especially against a team whose defense is as good as what the Hawks is at the moment. Kyle Korver. If there's any team that's going to get Kyle Korver back on track, it's going to be the Bulls, but he remains a tournament punt. Timmy Hardaway, 3,800, don't have much faith there. His salary has dropped $300, so that might make him interesting in a tournament. Holiday, Snell, no. Etwan Moore has been ruled out of this one with that hamstring issue. Unless you really buy the Justin Holiday revenge game factor, I don't think you need to look at him. The small forwards, Thabo Sefolosha should be back now. He sat the last game out. It was the Hawks' last back-to-back of the season, and Budenholzer said after the game, we just wanted to take it easy on him because he was feeling a bit stiff. That sort of information would have been great beforehand, Mike, but it is what it is. He's at 4,300. He is putting up some pretty nice numbers. His lowest score in his last five has been 21. His highest has been 32, but there's just a nagging feeling that goes, don't trust Thabo Sefolosha. The Hawks trust him. They're playing him big minutes, and they're expecting big production out of him. He's averaging 24 points across his last five, but I just have a feeling that it's just not going to happen one of these days. But the production's there. The history's there. The matchup's there. Everything's there for Thabo to go for 25 and really exceed that 4,300 value. So don't ignore him. Mike Dunleavy, I think you can safely ignore. Kent Bazemore, I think with Sefolosha back, Bazemore won't play the 30 minutes that he got in the last game, so that rules him out. Even at 4,200, I wouldn't be taking that chance. Nikola Mirotic at 4,900, he is as big a punt option as there is. He'll go from 7 points, which we had in the last game, to 44 two games ago. There is no cash game reliability in him whatsoever, and even in a tournament in this matchup against the Hawks, it's probably not the right environment, but you never know. It could happen at any time for him, and that makes him so frustrating. Power forwards. Paul Millsap, he was great the other day. We've talked plenty. We saw what Dwayne Dedman and Jason Smith did against the Bulls the other day. If you're a big man and you play the Bulls, it's like Christmas. You can unwrap your presents and you can put up some big numbers. Now, Millsap's at 8,200. That means he needs 41 points. Cool. You're playing the Bulls. Lock him in for 50. He's averaging 46 across his last three games. I feel pretty confident. I don't think that the forehead cut is going to be slowing him down. I don't think there's any concern here. Paul Millsap is a cash game option. He's a tournament option. He has got a massive chance for the monstrous line of the night tomorrow. Bobby Portis at 3,900. Doubt he exceeds value. Chrissy Humphreys at 36. You know, Chris Humphreys at 3,600. That's a low price. But again, Bulls bump is real. He's averaging 19 across his last three. He's had a 22-point game in 17 minutes. If he gets you 22 points, that's real value. Probably wouldn't use him, and it takes some pretty big knackers to do that. I wouldn't be surprised to see him come out with a 6X game. Taj Gibson at 5,200, really not producing much at all in the last three, averaging under 20 points. His value against the Hawks has been terrible, averaging just 16 points in the last three games. He is not someone that I'm all that interested in, especially with him dealing with some sore ribs and the Bulls seemingly limiting his minutes at the moment. The center position, Al Horford, same thing that I just said for Paul Millsap, 7,100 for Horford, great matchup. He's averaging 43 points in the last three games against the Bulls. Absolutely get ready to lock him in. He's one of the better center players there is. Pau Gasol, terrible matchup, injuries, minutes restricted, 8,600, not happening. Phoenix and Minnesota. There is fantasy value that is going to be coming out of this game's proverbial value hole. Point guards. Rick Rubio, 7,300. He dropped 44 in the last game. He's averaging 36 across his last five. This is a game where you're playing against the Suns. The point guards go real well, real, real well. Rubio is averaging over a point per minute at the moment. You expect him to get 35 minutes. You expect him to get 35 points. Plus, you get a Suns bump in there. Beautiful. Brandon Knight is at 7,100, and that's interesting as well. He's averaging 34 across his last five. I would rather take Rubio because Rubio's defense is a lot better than what Brandon Knight's is, but Knight is not someone to completely discount. Shooting guards. Devin Booker is obviously always the focus when the Suns play. He is at 6,600. That salary is pretty bloody high. He's averaging 37, though, across his last three, 34 across his last four. He's a little bit up and down, but I don't imagine the Timberwolves are going to be that restrictive on him. So at 6,600, for him to get 35 should be within reach. Zach LaVine at 6,100 has not been great lately. He is averaging 31 in his last three against the Suns in only 27 minutes, and at the moment he's getting 41 minutes a game. So the minutes are definitely there for him. He is in play. It's a really, really nice matchup for LaVine, so I expect him to have a pretty decent performance. John Jenkins has started the last two, but it hasn't really translated into great fantasy numbers. Small forwards, Wigo, he's at 6,600. The salary has dropped by $300, so that is interesting. 31 average across his last five, 27 across the last three. He's averaging 26 points in his last three against the Suns. None of these things stand out as being, I need to spend 6,600 on Wigo, but he could also tear him apart. So he becomes a tournament option, really. That's about it. PJ Tucker's been playing well. He's averaging 31 across the last... No, sorry, he had 31 in his last game, a 26 across his last three. He plays generally pretty well against Minnesota. He's priced at 4,800. I reckon he is a fine guy to look at using. Shabazz Muhammad, Chase Budinger, Tayshaun Prince, Nemanja Bjelica, and Damian Rudej are probably not guys that you need to pay a massive amount of attention to. The power forwards, Gorgui Dieng was bad in the last game. He had just 14 points, but I expect a bounce back in a pretty nice matchup. He's averaging 31, including that bad game across his last five. He's at 6,500. This should be a decent spot for him. He's a guy that should be able to get you close to a fantasy point per minute, and at 6,500, he's not a bad option. Mirza Teletovic really benefited with John Lua and Tyson Chandler out. So if those guys are out again, 33 points he dropped in the last game. He's at 4,500. He becomes one of the best options to use on the whole day's worth of games. If they play, probably steer clear. Alex Len, 6,100, just fallen completely off. The salary's dropping, but it hasn't dropped far enough. And if Lua plays and Chandler is out, he's at 4,400. He is someone that's worth looking at. Now, he was terrible in the game against the Kings, but that's what happens when big men go up against Boogie Cousins. We have to see whether he's playing, and if he is playing, he would be a tournament option. That's probably about it. The centers, Tyson Chandler, 4,400 for Chandler, but a big man dealing with back spasms is not something I'm interested in. And Carl Anthony Towns is at 8,900. He gets as great a matchup as you can get. His salary's actually dropped by 100 bucks. He's averaging 44 points across his last five. This should be an ability for him to get to 45 again, so I do like him significantly. The Spurs and the Grizzlies, this is a game that I do not like at all, and this harkens back to what's happened for the last couple of times the Spurs have played. Guys are out. Parker's out. Ginobili's out. Duncan's out. Kawhi Leonard's questionable. But where does the value go? Who gets it? Now, Patty Mills is at 3,700. He played 31 minutes in the last game, so the playing time was there. He put up 11 points. I don't hate using Patty Mills here at 3,700. I actually think that this could be a real big opportunity for him to put up big numbers. But I don't trust it at all. He's a fine guy to look at in a tournament, but seriously, my trust is pretty low. Ray McCallum in a revenge situation. He's not going to get enough minutes to really take revenge. Jordan Farmer, still not available on FanDuel. He'd be the guy that I'd be looking at, who's averaging 21 across the last three. He'd be a minimum salary guy most likely, but he's not available yet to use. Andre Miller, he had 23 points in the last game, but a few extra Spurs guys are back, so I'm not sure that I want to use him. And Xavier Munford, obviously we're not getting overly excited about him. The shooting guards, Dan Green, 3,700, doing absolutely jack shit at the moment, so he can be left very much alone. Tone Allen, 4,800. He had that massive game against the Lakers, then has dropped off in the last couple after that. He historically has not done well against the Spurs. He's averaging 26 across his last five, including that big game against the Lakers. At 4,800, he is an okay guy to look at, but I'm definitely not falling over myself to use him. Kev Martin, minimum salary. He's had opportunities in the last two games, done nothing with it. Lance, 6,600. Lance Stevenson, that is. The minutes are down. He's not playing 30 anymore. 6,600 just feels too expensive. And John Simmons at 3,600. He might find himself with a bigger role if Kawhi happens to be out. And then I might look at him. He dropped 22 in the last game with everyone sitting. He's at 3,600, but it's no confidence whatsoever in John Simmons. Small forwards, Kawhi, 8,500. If he plays 8,500 against the Grizzlies, he should be able to turn it into decent numbers, but probably won't be using him. Kyle Anderson would also get a bump if Kawhi is out, and he's at 3,600. He's averaging across his last three games 22 points, which at 3,600 is pretty impressive. So I'd be much more interested in using Kyle Anderson if Kawhi's out. Matty Barnes at 6,200. If Kawhi plays, probably not. If Kawhi is out, then 6,200, he is a tournament option, but that still feels too high for Matty Barnes. Vince Carter at minimum salary, probably not. Power forward LaMarcus Aldridge will be back for this game. He is priced at 8,000. He dropped 57 the last time that he played against this team. He's averaging 36 in the last three games against them. I think that he is a pretty solid guy to look at. The salary has risen 400 bucks, which is a bit of a bummer, but he is someone that you definitely can look at. The other two low price guys, Dave West, Boris Diaw. West had 30 points in the last game. Diaw had 15 in 27 minutes. Both guys are definitely worth a punt with Duncan out. I think that Diaw probably gets more minutes, and whether that translates into fantasy points, we don't know. But both guys remain a tournament punt, but the risk is always there with that sort of situation. Zach Randolph, it appears like he won't play. He's currently listed as questionable, but he probably won't. Wouldn't want to use him if he did. But with him out, Jermichael Green dropped 30 in the last game. He's at 5,800. 5,800 is not cheap. So he doesn't become a must-own player or a must-play player. Centers, Boban Marjanovic at 3,600. He had 24 points in the last game. He played 27 minutes. That was with Aldridge and Duncan out there. With Aldridge back, maybe, or most likely, his minutes go way back down. They'll play DR, they'll play West, they play Aldridge as the main guys there, and Marjanovic might get to 5 minutes, he might get to 10 minutes. He's definitely not someone that I'm going to be putting a massive amount of stock in. Now, the Birdman, on the other hand, Chris Anderson, 3,700. He played 37 minutes in the last game. He had 26 points. If Zebo is out, I'm okay with using Birdman at that salary. And even if he gets you 22 points, it's enough value back. Duncan's out, as we mentioned. Yeah, Brandon Wright, still no good either. The next game, the Lakers and the Jazz. Once again, no spread. No spread for any of these remaining games, actually. Let's look at the point guard battle. D'Angelo Russell looked pretty good in today's game. He's at 5,700, though. It's a horrible matchup for him. I probably won't want to use him. Shelvin Mack's been dreadful lately as well. His price has dropped down to 5,900, so it makes him a little bit more palatable, but averaging under 19 points across your last three games is not enough to get me interested in using you in a DFS lineup. Huertas, Neto, Burke, nah. Shooting guards. Rod Hood. Great matchup for Rod. He's priced at 5,000. He had a 25er in the last game, but he's just not doing enough. Unless you just really trust on someone blowing up on the Lakers, which is fair enough, and I can understand you doing that, then you'd look at Hood. But apart from that, I'm not massively enthralled, although the projection system does really love what he can do here. So he's a guy to pay attention to, but I'm not cash gaming him. Jordy Clarkson, 5,500. Terrible matchup, no thanks. Kobe, 5,800. Not using Kobe. Lou Williams, not with everyone healthy. And that's it. Small forwards. Where are we? Gordo Hayward, 7,000. He dropped 34 in the last game. He's averaging 36 in his last three against the Lakers. This should be a game where he can approach 40. I love Gordo here. The other guys, Joe Ingles, Meta World Peace, Ryan Kelly, they're not of any intrigue, I don't think. Power forwards, Derek Favors, 7,300. A really nice matchup for him. He's super athletic. He's super underrated. He is a guy that is just not quite getting to the right value at the moment, averaging under 30 across his last five. If there's ever a spot for him to get to 35 points, though, it's going to be this one. Just not putting much faith in it. Julius Randle, who's averaging 38 points across his last three games, 34 across his last five, and he's at 6,600. The matchup is really not a positive for him. He only had 27 today against the Wizards. I think he's an okay guy to look at, but I'm definitely not locking him down and thinking he's going to be the savior to all my DFS lines. At the center, obviously, we're ignoring Roy Hibbert. Rudy Gobert is at 5,500. His last three games against the Lakers have been productive, averaging over 30 points. But his last three games in real life, he's averaging 14 points. They're not good. 19 points across his last five. There's an opportunity here in this matchup for him to go big, but he remains a tournament-only option, given how poor he really has been of late. Dallas and Denver is the next one to have a look at. Let's get stuck straight into the point guards. At this point, it's really hard to rely on Emmanuel Mudiay with the way that he's being yanked around. Darren Williams is out of this one, so JJ Barea at 4,000 should get 30 minutes. Ray Felton at 4,100 should exceed 30 minutes. Now, Felton dropped 29 in the last game, and Barea had 19. I think that Barea probably sees over 20 in the next game. And both of these guys, I wouldn't be adverse to having your backcourt of just having Barea and Felton there, spending 8,100 for the two of them, and loading up on other guys like Kev Durant at small forward and say Dwayne Wade or DeMar DeRozan at shooting guard and getting some value out of these shooting guards. You've also got another great value point guard here, DJ Augustin at 4,900. He's averaging 32 across the last three games. 29 across his last five. He dropped 37 today. He's playing exceedingly well. There is a risk with him because what if they go with Mudiay 34 minutes? It doesn't appear like they will, but Mudiay might find his shot and he might get hot. But Augustin is putting together some pretty nice numbers and he's at less than 5,000. You have to consider him. 5,800 for Mudiay, that's really just a punt in a tournament and you hope that something changes, but it's not looking good. Shooting guards, Wes Matthews, 4,400. Not the best performance today, only 20 points, but a 30-point average across the last three. He wasn't putrid today, though, which is, I guess that's a start. He has the ability to go for 30, so I do like Wes here. Bill Barton, 5,200, a nice 26er today, but really the numbers aren't really in his favor, except that the last three games that he's played against the Mavericks, he's averaging 32 points. The problem is he's played 35 minutes in those last three games on average, and I really don't anticipate him getting close to that here. So not someone I'm overly enthusiastic about. Gaz Harris, Devin Harris, the Harrises, they can sit down and watch. Small forwards. Justin Anderson is at 3,600. He had 16 in the last game, but I don't care. We're not using him. And the only other shooting guard, small forward who's in play here, Axel Toupin and Jakar Sampson, we're definitely not using those guys. Power forwards. Unlikely Ken Fareed plays. So Darrell Arthur at 3,800. He's up and down. Probably not up enough for me to really have that much trust in. Dirk at 8,000, a really disappointing 19-point game for Dirk, but he's averaging 39 across his last five. He's averaging 37 the last three times he plays against the Nuggets. You'd be feeling relatively confident to get back on the Dirk horse here. David Lee, no. Dwight Powell at minimum salary. He had a nice 23-point game, but there was just a funky situation, so I don't trust him getting those minutes or that production again. And Ken Fareed, who in his last three against Dallas is averaging 37 points. That's magnificent, but we don't know if he's going to see the court, and if he does, I imagine his minutes will be pretty low. At center, Yusuf Nurkic, 4,300. He 31 points today. He's averaging 26 across the last five. This is a real big opportunity for Nurkic here. So in a tournament at 4,300, I absolutely love using him at that price. It's not often you get a low-priced center who can really go off, and Nurkic can be that guy. Nikola Jokic is at 6,200. That feels too expensive to me. The minutes for him have been capped lately, only averaging 23 across his last three games. He's still getting 28 points, but at 6,200, it's just not enough value in that sort of for me. Salah Mejri, 4,500. Nobody is going to be on Salah Mejri. I'm pretty confident in that. But this is not the matchup of the Kings. It's not the matchup of the Warriors. Now, recently, the Nuggets have been pretty good at reducing opposition centers, so that's a little bit of a concern. You could throw Mejri into a tournament. At 4,500, he's not bargain basement, so that means I'm probably a little bit off him. Zaza, JaVale, no. Sacramento and Portland, there is most likely going to be no Boogie Cousins in this game. So let's look at the point guards first. Dame Lillard is at 8,500. Doesn't get much better as a point guard than playing against the Kings. Lillard is very much up and down, but he's averaging 43 points across the last three games he's played against the Kings. He's averaging 39 in his last five games in total. His lowest score in his last five has been 31. So he is putting together some pretty consistent runs. His salary's dropped by 200. It's an easy matchup. I think it's fine to load up on Lillard here. Rajon Rondo at 7,700. He's been almost where you need him to be for that salary, averaging 39 across the last three, and this is a pretty tasty matchup, so I'm okay with using Rondo. Darren Collison, despite the fact that his minutes are being limited, really not normally. 5,500 with a 27 average, probably not a guy I want to use. Shooting guards, CJ McCollum, a good spot here against the Kings. He's at 7,000. He's averaging 35 across the last five. He dropped 45 in the last game. In his last three games against this team, in only playing 26 minutes, he's averaged 33.5 points. So he's definitely someone you can see going for over 35 points. Gerald Henderson and Alan Crabb, both cheap punt options at shooting guard. I put no faith in them doing that. And the same with the shooting guards for the Kings. Bellinelli, McLemore, Seth Curry, Jim Anderson. None of those guys are really worth your time and effort. The small forwards, Mo Harkless at 4,000. He's averaging 26 across his last three. He's the starter now. Unless something changes in that area, at 4,000, one of the best cheap small forwards that's on the board today. El-Farouq Aminu is very up and down. He's a good tournament play at 4,900, but he's a shit cash game play, so I wouldn't be looking at him in that sort of format. Rudy Gay, at some point, has got to turn around, but his salary's not dropping enough, so we can leave him out of it. Omri Caspi at 4,500, probably don't want to be looking at him, despite he's averaging 21 points, but at 4,500, he needs to be 25 points for me to really get excited with him. Power forwards. Willie Cauley-Stein at 3,900, despite George Karl's protestations about that it's nothing to do with what Cauley-Stein is doing, he is still doing it. He's averaging 27 points across the last three. He's averaging 32 points the last three times he's played against the Blazers, which is phenomenal, really. At 3,900, you almost have to use Cauley-Stein. Yes, you could get completely screwed by Karl, but at this point, Karl has been trying to screw him, and he's played well the last two games, so we have to pay attention to that. Eddie Davis at 4,600. He is another power forward option that is worth it. This is a great matchup against the Kings. He is averaging 31 points across his last three in 23 minutes. He's blocking shots, he's scoring, he's grabbing rebounds. 4,600, his lowest score in his last five is 22 points. And at 4,600, that's almost 5x. He's one of the better options that are out there. Noel Vonleh isn't, and neither is Quincy Acey. At center, Boogie is probably going to be out. So, Kostas Koufos at 3,800, he is a great option. The last time Boogie didn't play, he had 35 points in 38 minutes. He is a guy who's a bit under a point a minute fantasy-wise over his last five. You expect at 3,800, though, you get 27 points out of him. I reckon you're going to be pretty bloody happy. Mason Plumlee had a nice little run. It's dropped off a little bit, and he's at 5,300. He needs to be under 5,000 for me to really start getting back on board. And that's the centers. The last game, the Clippers and the Celtics. The last two, I remember the last time these teams played, where I was like, oh, Chris Paul against the Celtics, you know, Celtics point guards against the Clippers. That's terrible for both of them, and they all absolutely blew up. So what do I know? Something you might give. It looks like it's a terrible matchup for both teams, but last time they both went absolutely crazy. Isaiah Thomas at 8,000. In his last three against the Clippers, he's averaging 40 points. He's averaging 37 across the last five. He's fine to use. Chrissy Paul, 9,600. He's averaging 44 the last three times he's played the Celtics, which is much better than his recent averages against other teams. So he does thrive in these matchups. And the Celtics recently haven't been quite as good as reducing point guard production. So he's an option here too. 9,600 for Paul. Thomas, both those guys are worth looking at. Marcus Smart had a big 27-pointer in the last one. He's at 4,200. He is strictly a tournament option, but that is literally it. Austin Rivers, Terry Rozier, Pablo Prigioni, they're probably not worth your time. Shooting guards, JJ Redick at 4,700. He's averaged 30 points the last three times he's played the Celtics. He hasn't been, obviously, that productive lately, averaging just 19 points across the last five, so he's a tournament option. Same with Crawford at 4,800. And Avery Bradley, who's been pretty solid, a 30-point average across his last five. He's really struggled previously against the Clippers, so this is not an ideal opportunity for him here, I don't think. Small forward, still no Jay Crowder, but he could be back this week. Evan Turner, you've got to take advantage of Evan Turner. He's at 6,200. The matchup's terrible, but he's averaging 32 across his last five. So I think 30 points should be something you can hope for, but the matchup is not good. Jeff Green is a tournament punt option. Wes Johnson won't do as well as what he did today. Paul Pierce, Luke Marmute, they're not really in the conversation at all. The power forwards. If you can predict what the Celtics power forwards are going to do, then good luck to you. Jared Sullinger's salary has dropped $300. That is interesting. His last three against the Clippers, he is averaging 36 fantasy points in 28 minutes. That is very appealing. That is very interesting information. But he's also averaging 19 points across his last five games. Since Amir Johnson's been playing more minutes and Kelly Olynyk has been back, Sullinger's playing time has been reduced. At 5,600, he is an okay tournament option, but there's no trust. No trust also for Amir Johnson, who looked like he was settling into a 30-minute role, but next minute he plays 24 and does nothing. And that is the nature of the Celtics front court. Jonas Jerebko, he's a minimum salary guy, but he's not worth playing for either. At center, Kelly Olynyk, love him, but needs minutes. DeAndre Jordan, 8,300, great matchup against the Celtics. His average is 43 the last three times he's played them. He's at 45 just in his last three games in general. He's at 8,300. I feel fine locking him in. And Cole Aldrich at 3,600. Needs more minutes for us to rely upon him. Let's have a look at the DFS picks of the day now. Point guard, as I said, there's plenty of options there. You could have Larkin, you could have Barea, you could have Felton, but I like DJ Augustin at 4,900. That's a good spot against Dallas. Rick Rubio, 73, and Dame Lillard, 85. The shooting guards, Wes Matthews, 44, CJ McCollum, 7,000, and DeMar DeRozan, 79. Small forwards, Mo Harkless, 4,000, Gordy Haywood, 7,000, and Kev Durant, 10,300. Power forwards, Willie Cauley-Stein, 3,900, Gorgie Jeng, 65, and Paulie Millsap, 82. And the centers, Kostas Koufos, 38, assuming DeMarcus Cousins is out, Bob Lopez at 5,800, and Karl-Anthony Towns at 8,900. We are done today, guys. Don't forget to go onto SeatGeek and use that promo code REDROCK, and to follow me on Twitter at REDROCK_BBall for all your... to catch the pod or for any other information and questions you may have. Of course, there's Basketball Monster and the Basketball Monster Twitter account, which is at BaskMonster, which I do encourage you to follow. Good luck in your playoffs. It might be your championship round. It might be your semifinals. Good luck in those matchups. Good luck with your DFS lineup. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.